Well, hey, what's going on? Happy Monday. Nick Kirby here. Welcome to Chatterbox Reds, proudly sponsored by DSC Commodities. Coming up in just a minute, myself and Trace Fowler from Chatterbox Reds live on YouTube. But first, let's recap the Reds game from Sunday afternoon. It was Frankie Montas on the mound for the Reds going up against Giants left-hander Kyle Harrison. Harrison entered the season one of the top prospects in baseball, and he was off to a great start this year. In the top of the first, TJ Friedl was hit by a pitch on his wrist. More on that in a second. Friedl would stay in the game, steal second base. Then Spencer Steer walked with one out. Stuart Fairchild walked with two outs, and that loaded the bases for Jamer Candelario. And Candelario smoked a ball 104 off the bat, went 407 feet off the top of the wall. It cleared the bases. Reds led 3-0. It was actually reviewed as close to a homer, but the call stood on the field. Unfortunately, though, TJ Friedl would leave the game, and he said after the game that it was his left thumb that got hit. He's going to see a hand specialist in Arizona to get more imaging done. He was hit up by the nail and was able to bend and extend the thumb, but it's very swollen. So more tough injury news for the Reds. Frankie Montas started off really strong in this one. He did not give up a hit until the fourth inning. He also got some help when Stuart Fairchild robbed Lamonte Wade Jr. of extra bases in the fourth inning. The Reds still led 3-0 going into the bottom of the fifth, but Montas gave up back-to-back hits, and then Lamonte Wade Jr. hit a 321-foot home run, just barely fair down the right field line, tying the game up at 3. The home run was a home run literally only in Oracle Park in San Francisco. The Cowboy on the radio broadcast said basically that the time of day was the only reason he thought that the ball was able to travel out of the ballpark with the wind blowing to right field. He said if that was a night game, that's probably not even to the warning track, was his words. Unfortunately, though, that wouldn't be the end of the damage in the fifth. Montas would give up two more runs in the inning. The fifth run scored on a throwing error from Ellie De La Cruz on a slow roller that bounced in front of first baseman Jamer Candelario, and then it took an unfortunate hop all the way into right field. 5-3 Giants. The Reds would get a run back in the top of the seventh on three straight two-out singles from Spencer Steer, Jonathan India, and pinch hitter Jake Fraley, making it a 5-4 game. And then in the top of the eighth, Mike Ford crushed a leadoff home run to straightaway center field. Ford's first home run with the Reds, game tied up at 5. And the Reds bullpen, they put up 0 after 0, including Alexis Diaz dodging an error by Spencer Steer in left field that put the winning run into scoring position in the bottom of the ninth. Diaz was able to send us into extra innings. In the top of the 10th, of course, with the ghost runner on second base, Santiago Espinal started off the inning with a strikeout. Tyler Stephenson grounded out. Will Benson dead walk, stole second base, but then Ellie De La Cruz struck out to end the inning. In the bottom of the 10th, Emilio Pagan started off the inning. He struck out Yastrzemski, got Ramos to fly out, and then he walked Blake Sable. Freddie Benavidez, who had taken over as manager early in the game because David Bell got sick, decided to go to Lucas Sims. And Sims got ahead of Casey Schmidt 0-2, but then he left a fastball right in the middle of the plate that Schmidt hit to left center field for a ground rule double. Giants win 6-5. Reds fall to 17-23 on the season. Reds have lost 13 out of their last 16 games, and the one-run losses just keep coming. Reds now just 1-8 in one-run games this season after last year going 34-29. After the game, here's what Freddie Benavidez had to say.
Freddie, first of all, is you had to step in for David. Is he okay?
Yeah, he's doing okay. He just had a stomach issue and just something he had to deal with and just couldn't make it out there today.
Those are obviously the toughest games to lose on the road and extra innings and the situation, series on the line, obviously.
I mean, they're all tough. Right now we're in a tough stretch, right? We're not playing what we're capable of. But, you know, it is tough to lose a game like that, especially if you try to win a series. But you just got to keep coming out every day, keep coming out, keep battling. And tomorrow's a new day. We got to get after it.
Do you have any more info on Friedel? Any more info on Friedel?
No info on Friedel yet. Tomorrow he'll see a doctor there in Arizona.
You guys had your chances, obviously, but 13 left on base. One of the things you could point to fallen short today.
Yeah, I mean, we had some opportunities. I mean, to try to score some runs there. We just couldn't come up with a big hit. Credit to their pitching staff, of course, right? But, you know, like we said, just situations arose. I thought some of the guys swung the bat pretty good in general. Benson just, balls just didn't fall.
Do you think about sending Alexis back out there? I know there's no days off for another week, but...
Yeah, I mean, there was a thought, especially we can try to keep him, you know, under 12 pitches below. But, I mean, he had one day 20-something pitches, so I think what he did his job and he did what he was supposed to do, so unless it was a quick inning.
And here's Frankie Montas on his start.
I thought I'd make a good pitch on way two. Can't explain how that went out, but, you know, it is what it is.
I feel like, you know, you guys take an early lead, then Friedel gets hurt, stuff happens. I feel like whenever you guys get some momentum this year, things kind of slip away from you guys.
To be honest with you, can't do nothing about that. The only thing we can do is just keep going out there and just keep on grinding. You know, it's not going to be the whole season, you know. But something that I can tell you, we are working to get out of this, you know. And like I said, that's the only thing that we can control. Just trying to go out there and trying to produce runs, whatever, you know. And I feel like the guys are finally waking up, you know, like doing better, getting better at bats. So I feel like from here on out, we're just going to continue getting better.
Well, our deep drive of the day was Mike Ford's game-tying home run in the eighth inning. His first home run with the Reds had an exit velocity of 106, went 427 feet. And our deep drive of the game sponsored as always by Deep South Commodities. DSC is a leader in renewable commodities for biofuel production, specializing in used cooking oil collection, aggregation, and sales. Visit www.deepsouthcommodities.com for more information. Thanks as always to our friends at DSC. All right, checking out scores around the NL Central. The Cardinals beat the Brewers 4-3. Cubs beat the Pirates 5-4. So your NL Central standings on Monday morning. Brewers sit at first at 24-16. Cubs just a half game back at 24-17. Pirates 18-23. Reds 17-23, 6.5 back. And the Cardinals are 16-24. Reds also fall to 3.5 games back of the San Diego Padres for the third and final NL wildcard spot. All right. Well, here's myself and Trace Fowler from Chatterbox Reds Live on YouTube. Stick around at the end. Tell you about all of the Reds minor league action from Sunday. And we'll also preview the series coming up against the Arizona Diamondbacks.
All right, Nick. Tough day today. Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers. Don't want to forget that. And another losing edition of Chatterbox Reds. This is going to be a, in my opinion, I think a very good show. Now, I do know why people might think that that couldn't possibly be the case because of the way that the game went. And I do think it's reasonable to have a pretty good show tonight. No matter where you stand right now. Like, if you stand on the side of the aisle that you think this team's absolutely horrific and they're going to finish in last place, maybe you just think it's a rough patch of baseball, or you're somewhere in between those two. There's a lot to discuss tonight. I know Nick, you had a busy day today, but there's more bigger picture questions maybe than there are of the nuances of every single minute detail of a game. So I'm sure we'll get into all of it. Nick, I'll just ask you on the forefront here before we get into baseball, though. Just your Mother's Day go semi well. Well, you got three of them now, so it's a little different.
Yeah, it was good. Went and got some ice cream.
Nice.
This afternoon, my kids rolled down a hill for about like an hour.
On purpose, right?
On purpose, yeah, yeah. Okay, it was like good. A little hill that, you know, nice. You can run, you know, kids do that. And yeah, it was great because now they're sleeping very well. So that's good. Just kept rolling down, rolling back up. So full transparency, I watched about 20 pitches of this game. I was fortunate enough to see the 0-2 pitch that Lucas Sims threw. So I did see that and caught a lot on the radio. Shout out to Tommy Thrall and the Cowboy. I don't listen to the radio very often because it is typically pretty important for me to visualize and see the game to do these shows. Those guys are fantastic. They do a really good job at painting the picture. If you're trying to, like I am, try to actually, you know, understand what's going on to be able to talk about it later. So shout out to those guys. They do an incredible job.
Yeah. I think there's so many things to get into today that I don't know if we don't have enough time. And I know people probably think that that's a joke, but there's genuinely a bunch of questions I have. I guess I'll start with, I know we have kind of the one run loss on there again, but this is the first time in probably, what, 2 weeks, I'd say, in my humble opinion, that the Reds should have. They lost the game. Now, I think that people might misinterpret what I'm getting ready to say, but this is the first time in back-to-back days they actually lost the game. And I know everyone's going to say, well, what about the losing streak? Sometimes the teams are just better than you, and they outplay you, and they have better players. But the last two nights, it feels like it just this team's finding ways to lose now. And I'm starting to question whether or not this is going to be bold, maybe. And I'm not trying to be bold or hot takey or anything like that. But like, at some point, you do question leadership when you start to see the things that we see. And maybe it's just guys aren't good at baseball and they're not making the right plays and things of that nature. But and I know David Bell, heaven forbid, Benavidez, or I think that's his name. What's the bench coach's name?
Freddie Benavidez.
Freddie Benavidez, and listen, I'm sure he's a great guy, and I've been told that he is, and he did not do a very good job of making this case to be a major league manager today either. It's just a lot of head scratching moves, in my opinion, and now you find yourself in a position where whatever they've been doing isn't working. And maybe I'm overreacting, but it's like the whole concept or the notion of what they've continued to do to think, oh, this is going to get us out of rut. Like, how long do you discipline your kids or you parent your kids in a way in which you think is right, and then they continue to do something that's not right until you say, you know what, maybe we should do something different? And I think that's where I'm at now. Now, people are going to be like, well, what are you supposed to do, Trace? And I know people are going to joke about, you know, throwing bats or coming to the press conference and ripping guys' tails, but there's only so many times that you can continue to watch this team play and think to yourself that there shouldn't be some semblance of a difference. And maybe it's some of the players for leadership, you know? And I'm not looking at Jonathan India square in the face, but listen, if you're going to say you're a leader on this team, well, now's the time to lead. We need somebody to step up. I'll give Candelaria some credit. He's at least started to make some plays, and he looks relatively competent, and I think he's got some leadership qualities to him. So before I go on a long rant, I just want to get it out there and say there needs to be some really hard looks into the way that this club goes about their business to figure out whether or not there needs to be a change or not. And I'm not suggesting David Bell needs to be fired per se, but maybe some of the ways in which we've gone about the beginning of these seasons needs to be looked upon as a little differently, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that last year there was a lot of overreaction to the Reds going 34 and 29 in one run games. I don't think that was sustainable, especially with the roster the Reds had last year. I think there's probably now a little bit of overreaction to the Reds being 1-8 in one run games. Now, this doesn't mean that the Reds are a great team or anything. That's only, you know, a couple games, but if they're 5-4, they're above 500 right now. If they're 4-5, they're one game below 500. And I think that's probably where this team is closer to where they're actually at. You know, you hope that that evens out, but nonetheless, you've kind of, it seems, just didn't have a lot of margin for error, and that margin for error is continuing to dwindle down. So I personally, it's some big giant leadership thing. I think that it's a lot of unfortunate things, a lot of poor performances. It's just been a mixture of everything, and it's kind of been, you know, what could have gone wrong, whether it's things that could be controlled or not be controlled, has gone wrong.
There is some semblance of truth when you look at the standings and at the end of the season. I'm sure that the Reds, when you get into the analytics, and no one cares about that right now, but last year the Padres, everyone was talking about how good the Padres were, right? And I just kept kind of saying, like, are we sure the Padres are going to be there at the end? I know that the expected win-loss rate is a lot different than what they actually are, but this team, at the end of the year, I'm sure we're going to look at what their expected win-loss should have been, and it's probably going to be better than whatever they finish. Now maybe they resurrect this start, or I'm going to call it a start because it's May 12th. I know that they got off to a 14-10 start, but right now, I think when you look at the first what are we at, about a month and almost a month and a half now into the season, that's still the start to me. Maybe I'm wrong in saying that, but I wouldn't really say. You know, maybe at the end of this month, I'll conclude the fact that we're starting to get past the start of the season. But there's just so many places I should go. This is where I should keep notes. The biggest thing that jumps out to me is another one-run loss, and there's just so many situations that they could have found a way to win the game. It's just there's and I guess we have to start somewhere, right? And I'll start with Sims. Pagan obviously comes in the game. Benavidez makes a decision to pull out Pagan. And Pagan, I know, hasn't been unbelievable this season. I get that, but I thought he looked pretty good. He certainly did his job. When you have a base open too, I don't mind a walk, you know, like that's the thing. Like when I was watching Pagan throw the ball, I wasn't thinking to myself he had command issues whatsoever. And perhaps whether it was analytics or whether it was just a gut by Benavidez, which I highly doubt he's going off of gut, but if he was, it was a bad decision. But regardless, you bring in Sims, who's not been very good this year. And this is the part that really, I don't know, is pissed is a bad word, but it really upsets me. Sometimes you got to have feel, man. You got to have a little bit of feel for the game. And I don't mean to kill Stevenson for this, because ultimately I know what he was trying to do. If you didn't remember or you didn't get a chance to see it, the pitch sequence went just like this. You had a first pitch breaking ball for a strike. You had a second pitch breaking ball that wasn't really all that close, but the guy bit on it because Sims does have a good breaking ball if he throws it well. So he swings, he check swings, strike two. He looks very lost right now, for being honest. He took the first pitch for a strike, didn't look like he wanted it at all, kind of, you know, looked terrible on the second pitch. So to give Stevenson credit, or whoever's calling these pitches credit, they went breaking ball again, which he missed by a mile. He was trying to throw it outside. He was trying to start it on the outside corner and let it break off the plate and try to get a swing and miss. Instead, it ended up, like, I believe it was up and in on the hitter. But again, he kind of check swinged real fast, and it you know, bounces off the bat. And then for the life of me, I understand why you might want to throw a fastball just to maybe change the speed or change the eye level, whatever it is, but I don't understand how you can be a major league player and miss a fastball that bad. I mean, we're talking middle fastball, and unfortunately it got smashed. And you're looking at yourself and you're thinking, 0-2. The guys looked absolutely clueless on three or four straight sliders, and we decided to throw a fastball right down the middle. And I mean, when I say down the middle, I don't know, I'm sure that we could pull up the game day, but you couldn't possibly throw, you know, in a better spot for him to barrel up. And I would just say this. I love Ellie De La Cruz too. But, like, the difference is that, unfortunately, Ellie, he swung right through his 95-mile-an-hour cookie, and they didn't miss it. And right now, that's the difference. This team's not executing when they need to execute in close, meaningful games that they can't afford to lose, because this team's not good enough to overcome this. I really don't believe they're good enough to overcome this. What I mean by that is, like, it'd be one thing if you're the Braves and you have a week and a half and you're just not playing good at all. Because you know in the back of your mind, okay, instead of winning 98 games, maybe we win 90. Just not the case for this team. And maybe we're missing McLean and we're missing Marte, and that's the real crux of the problem. But, you know, I just continue to find myself thinking that this team's just not good, Nick. I hate to say that, but that's where I'm at.
I didn't understand what the logic was to what they were doing in the bottom of the 10th. Because you've already used 1, 2, 3, 4. Pagan was the fifth reliever.
Fifth reliever, yes.
If you get out of that inning, you right. have to throw another inning after that.
Correct.
If you're that worried about Pagan, start with Sims. I don't, what was the, I mean,
it's
Sims
called David, it's called Benavidez just being lost.
Yeah. I mean, again, like, Sims is probably a better pitcher for that individual situation, but Pagan's making $8 million. You got to trust him there,
right?
He pitched fine. He struck out Yastrzemski. He got Ramos to fly out, you know, maybe a little bit generous in that ballpark,
right. Went
he
full count.
Sable. He walked Sable. He should have walked Sable. Honestly, they should have intentionally walked Sable. I don't know why they even tried to pitch to him. I mean, Blake Sable is a guy that is off to a great start. Last year was close to a league average hitter. Casey Schmidt last year had a 55 weighted runs created plus. He only got called up because they have a ton of injuries.
Yeah.
Like, Casey Schmidt is the guy you want to face.
Hasn't had a hit all year.
Yeah, I mean, like, Pagan was fine. I just don't understand how that move would have helped you win the game. Like, even if they would have got out of that.
They were going to bring Sims back out again, I'm guessing.
You're going to need Sims another. That to me was wild, that whole sequence. And I mean, yeah, Sims has got to be better than that. You can't hang an 0-2 pitch to a guy that's desperate for you to hang an 0-2 pitch.
Yeah. Well, it was a fastball too. I mean, not like he hung a breaking ball. And I'm not suggesting that if he hung a breaking ball, I'd be sitting here thrilled to death. But at least you could convince me that he just misexecuted on a pitch, and that's what it was. He was trying to throw another breaking ball, and it spun up there. But when I tell you he looked, I mean, what was the poor kid's name that hadn't had a hit all season? He's very forgettable. What was the last guy that got
Casey Schmidt.
Casey Schmidt couldn't have possibly been. He couldn't have possibly looked worse the first two pitches. The first pitch was just a breaking ball. He took it, and it was a pretty good. I mean, you're not going to swing at a first pitch breaking ball anyways more times than not, but he took it. The next pitch, it looked like a Diaz swing, and everybody knows what I mean with a Diaz swing. Like, it just was like, why in the hell would you swing at that? So to be fair, they threw, I think another breaking ball, maybe two more, whatever it was. But again, we're focusing on one at bat at the end of the game that made the difference. But as a whole, we find ourselves again, this Reds offense, we'll jump into that. Like, this Reds offense, you start the game off and you have good at bats, man. You have such good at bats and you're feeling so good about yourself. You're going against a guy that you know you should be able to get to. And Candelario hits a ball. And this is where, like, everyone's like, God, I'm so tired of listening to the luck stuff. I could care less. I know a guy earlier in the game hit a 319-foot home run that was just basically a wind tunnel. And I get it. It's a little bit of poor luck. But my point is like, you can't score three runs in the first inning and then genuinely find yourself in a position where you just don't add on. And if we're one swing away from being right back in the same situation we've been in all year long. Like, if Candelario doesn't square that ball up, he flies out. They score two runs. They score two runs today. One run. It's just such bad luck, too, because Ellie had a bad day. Like, of all the days we need Ellie De La Cruz to be Ellie De La Cruz like he's been all season, today's the day, and he unfortunately comes up in a big spot. He swings through it. Jonathan India, when we need him to get a hit, he doesn't get a hit. When we need him not, it doesn't. And when he comes up with two outs and nobody on, he decides to get a hit then. It's just like, you can't win for losing with this team, man. And you know, as far as TJ Friedl goes, what a joke, too. Like, absolute joke. I'm going to try to say nice things, but I can't. Like, it's just very indicative to me. And whether it was the broadcast's fault or whoever's fault it was, I don't give a damn whose fault it was. It just goes right in line with everything else we're told. The guy gets hit. He obviously stays in the game for a minute. So be it. Comes out. They could do an x-ray. We're told good news on the broadcast. Good news. The x-ray came back negative, and it's just a bone contusion. Okay. All right. Fine. Well, next inning or whatever the hell it was, like, well, actually, we got misinformation. It's not a negative. It's inconclusive. Like, all right. I mean, do we know what the hell's going on around here? We're about as clueless, and I don't know if you've seen it, Nick, but for those that want to have a good laugh, and by good laugh, I mean it's kind of like embarrassing. Top Rank last night, I'm the only loser that watches boxing still. Top Rank last night has two females fighting for a world championship, and the ring announcer announces he announces the wrong scorecard. He told one lady she won the world championship. She didn't win the world championship, so then he just rereads it all again, and then the other one won. It's the craziest thing I've ever seen. And that's what it reminded me of today when we're out here trying to report on TJ Friedl. We don't know what's going on. We don't know what's coming. We don't know what's going. We think that some guys are hurt. They'll be out 2 weeks, and I'm sure now TJ Friedl, and maybe I'm being super negative because I'm tired of watching this team, I'm sure he'll be out for 3 months too. Like, I certainly hope. I'll tell you this right now, Nick. I will actually join the bandwagon of people saying this training staff, and then I don't know who the hell, it might just been a, like, shout out to Bally, but it might have just been Bally, to be fair. But if it comes out this guy's got actually a broken thumb and he's out again for another whatever it's going to be, 10 weeks. Like, can't get TJ Friedl right, can't get CES right. Matt McLean, he obviously supposedly tweaks an oblique. He'll be fine. No big deal. He'll be back in 2 weeks. And then all of a sudden, no, he's not back till August. Nick Lodolo, he was going to come back last year, remember? And then all of a sudden, now it's like, well, he might be ready by spring training. He's not even ready to start the year. Like, what in the actual hell is going on? Is it just a miss? Do they just want to play games and give us misinformation? Or do they just want to keep, you know, not knowing how to tell us the truth? I don't know. And to be fair, I don't have a PhD. I know nothing about being a doctor. So there's that.
I need to talk to fans of other teams about this kind of stuff. As I'm curious if this is like, does every team kind of have this thing where they feel like they get a lot of information? Is it just like the age that we're in, where there's so much information instantly to you that this kind of thing feels like it happens a lot? I don't know the answer to it.
Don't say nothing. If you don't want to say anything, that's fine. Like, if you're just like, hey, we're going to keep that private. We're trying to get all the reports out. That's fine.
I'm sure that would go over well, though.
Well, I mean, just lying or telling us something that's not true is worse. I mean, hell, listen, if my wife doesn't love me, I'd love if just come out and tell me you don't love me. That's fine. We can all get sour about it and then we can move on. But, you know, don't sit here and tell me that you're one way and you're not. And again, maybe they're not lying. Maybe it's just bad luck. But we're like five people in now, and I'm starting to ask myself, does anybody out here know what the hell's going on? And it certainly doesn't feel like it at times. And maybe it's just because we're all mad and sad, and, you know, we've been through hell and back, you know? I mean, listen, Pete Rose out here talking about he'd go through hell in a gasoline suit to play baseball. I mean, Reds fans, we basically go through hell to pay Bally Sports. Think about us. We're going through hell in a gasoline sports to pay for Bally Sports on, you know, the Ocho, basically. You got to pay $195 a month to be able to watch the Reds play. And here we are. This is what we get out of it. We get to watch piss poor baseball. Anyway, I'm just telling you how I feel. I'm sure there's many people that are probably saying amen right now. I don't know, man. I'm sorry that I'm ranting. And I'm sorry that folks have to watch this on an everyday basis, but that's just who we are. We love the Reds, and that's not even getting into Fraley. I mean, I love Fraley to death, but he about dropped a pop-up. We have Espinal, who overran a pop-up in the infield. We have Candelario, who's not able to pick a baseball clean. Will Benson, by the way, he's nowhere to be found on a pop-up, and poor Spencer Steer, who can't, you know, he's basically as fast as Kevin Newman. He drops a ball in the outfield, so it requires Diaz to get another out. By the way, if Diaz doesn't get that out, we're talking about Spencer Steer being a guy that can't catch a pop-up. Ellie De La Cruz is 95, maybe 120 feet in the outfield trying to catch a ball over his shoulder, and Will Benson's just staring at him. You're the center fielder, Will. If you can't hit, at least run and catch a pop-up. So, you know... Yeah. I'm tired of them. I am so sick and tired of 90, like half this team, man. Like they offer literally next to nothing. Next to nothing. And I know there's nobody out there for help. And yeah, that's the most frustrating part. It's the most frustrating part. I mean, Will Benson is literally staring at Ellie De La Cruz trying to run 120 feet in the outfield to catch a pop-up, and he sees Spencer Steer, who he has to know. He has to know Spencer Steer is the slowest outfielder on this team. And by slow, I mean slow. You can't be any slower than Spencer Steer. And I love Spencer Steer. He's a great hitter. But by God, if he's playing left field in the outfield for your favorite team, you're probably wishing you had a better outfielder. And I love Spencer Steer. Take no disrespect, please. But my God. Somebody and just somebody be something positive for this team outside of like two or three people. So, you know, if you want to say that I'm being overly pessimistic or I'm jumping to conclusions too soon, I'm sorry. But this team sucks. Until we get some better players, they're not going to be any better. I could be wrong. I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong. But by God, we got as much starting pitching as you possibly could have gotten. Our bullpen was great. You turn around and you look and you're like three of your last 14 or whatever the hell they've been. And you ask yourself, what happens if just maybe the bullpen blows it a couple games. What happens if the starting pitching does give up like 6-7 runs? Then what? Then what? In St. Louis right now, they're thinking about boycotting their damn team, and they're also trying to get rid of their manager. I don't know if you've looked, but we're having just as bad of a season. I don't know. Who do we call up? I really don't have an answer for that either. But boy, oh boy, do they've really done it to themselves this year. They've really made themselves proud, I'm sure. But anyway.
The Game Time app is now an authorized ticket marketplace for Major League Baseball. That makes getting tickets even faster and easier. Prices on the Game Time app actually go down the closer it gets to first pitch. With killer last-minute deals, all-in pricing, views from your seat, and the lowest price guarantee, Game Time takes the guesswork out of buying MLB tickets. With all-in pricing, you can toggle this feature and it shows you the total up front with no surprise fees at checkout. The lowest price guarantee or Game Time will credit you 110% of the difference. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with the Game Time app. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use the code CINCY for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem the code CINCY, C-I-N-C-Y, for $20 off. Download the Game Time app today. Last minute tickets, lowest price, guaranteed. And we also want to remind you that you can call or text 988 at any time, day or night. The 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline is a place to get support for anything related to mental health. Whether it's an immediate crisis, simply wanting to find out how to connect with care, or anything in between, it's a 100% confidential, secure, and anonymous way to reach out for help when you don't know where else to turn. To connect, call or text 988 or visit mantherapy.org to get help. It's okay not to be okay.
TJ Friedl, he's probably hurt. Probably out for the season.
I don't think he's out for the season. I don't think a thumb typically ends a season.
I don't know if he's... I'm really glad you didn't watch this game, Nick. Are the Giants suck too, by the way. What's their record?
19-23.
Yeah. They're a too. Wait until the end of the season. They're going to be terrible. I got news for you. So I watched the series and I thought to myself, this team should... We should have swept this team. Which makes me think they're bad. They're terrible.
They honestly probably the only team in baseball that has had worse injury luck than the Reds. I mean, they have.
Yeah, they had another guy go down today.
Yeah, and he's one of their best players. Been playing well. They lost Conforto yesterday. They've had a really tough season too. A game like today is a game that it is what it is. If it's in the middle of a 5-5 stretch or whatever, when it's, you know, 13 out of 16, it's magnified. You're going to lose games like this. It stinks.
Trying to be positive. I like that out of you.
They did fight back. I don't think the season's over. I think there's a higher hill to climb. I mean, I don't know. I feel like everyone that said the season's over said the Reds were going to the playoffs last August 1st.
Season's never over. Season's never over. So I do want to say that out loud. Season's not over. Season's never over until it's over, as Yogi Berra might was saying. But yeah, Nick, where's the positive come from then? I mean, I know that you're pretty grounded. I'm pretty emotional at times when I watch this team. Where is the hope?
The hope is Candelario's playing better.
That is true.
He's honestly, I'm not a lineup guy, but I don't know why he's hitting as low as he is right now. Because he's been a pretty good hitter over the last several weeks. I'd probably like to see him getting more at bats. India, who looked as dead as you could look yesterday, had 3 hits today. I don't know if it means anything, but that was a positive development.
The one time he struck out is when we couldn't eat. We it's just crazy.
The Reds bullpen had been struggling of late. I think the Reds offensive woes really masked, you know, the fact that the Reds bullpen had pitched pretty poorly over the last couple weeks. Pitched great today, threw five innings with no earned runs, because that last run is not an earned run. The bullpen was incredible. I mean, that's an unbelievable job. I mean, look, and they're facing a weak lineup, sure. probably even weaker than the Reds, if we're being completely honest. But they did their job. I mean, they only walked two batters in those five innings, threw strikes, and one of them was Pagan, which I think was a pitch around to Sable. I think they should have intentionally walked him. So they pitched well. Look, I don't know. You hope that this turns. You hope that, you know, some of the things that have been going the way Reds way go the Reds way. I don't know. Baseball's funny. It's very well might end up being something really stupid that we go, how did the Reds win these games? You know, you hope that it turns like that. But I don't know. I can't predict that that's going to happen. I can't guarantee that's going to happen. That's why you play these games every day. That's why the worst team in baseball isn't a sure thing, playing against the best team in baseball every day. Like, it's a long season, and there's so many highs and so many lows, and right now it's pretty low.
It is low. For those that are wanting to know, you know, from a look ahead perspective, you have the Diamondbacks for a 3-game set. You got the Dodgers for a 4-game set. What Nick's talking about is to be fair about this whole situation is that, and I know people are going to laugh, and I would too if I were you, but you find a way where you certainly have to take 2 or 3 from the Diamondbacks. And then from there, you take 3 or 4 from the Dodgers, or you sweep the Dodgers. Like, I know that sounds dumb, but if you were to sweep the Dodgers 4 games straight, which is, like I said, that's, you know, you can laugh if you want now. This is the time to laugh. Insert the old sitcom laugh track. But, you know, if you did that, then you find yourself in a position where you're like, you know what? All in all, not a bad road trip. You look back at this stretch, and you look at the Orioles series. You can't hit a baseball to save your life. Go back to the Diamondbacks, the series, and they had a chance to win 2 or 3 there, but they ended up getting swept. And I know people are gonna think we're crazy, but I think you could have swept this series, and you end up losing 2 or 3. So, you know, as much as I am sitting here suggesting this team's terrible, some of that's because I've watched a baseball game today that I felt like they jumped out to an early lead. And then they you know, watched it evaporate, and then they fought their way back. You get yourself into a situation in the 10th inning where you had an excellent opportunity to break through and score, and you don't. It's just tough, and you watch Sims come in and do, unfortunately, what Sims done far too often this year, which is not get outs when it matters the most. All right, TJ Friedl, you know, we'll have to wait and see. Obviously, I mentioned earlier, got hit in the thumb, of course, on the first at bat of the game. And it looked bad. He looked like he was in pain. But again, x-rays supposedly came back negative. Now it turns out that it's inconclusive. He's going to go see a hand specialist. And I don't know, Nick. Like, there's just no other options either. Like, there's no Calvary, is there?
There's one guy I would like to see the Reds give a shot. I think it's a little crazy.
Make him hurt
a
little.
Yeah, look, guy hit a home run for Dayton today. He's a guy that there's not really a whole lot more that he's going to gain from the minor leagues.
Right.
He's a guy that I think could put the ball in play. I think that the Reds could use that kind of guy right now.
I agree.
Call him up. I think, you know what? What do you have to lose?
Give Jacob Burton
a shot. He's older. And I'm selfish because I interviewed the guy and I really, really like him. So maybe I'm you know, drinking the Kool-Aid a little too much, but I really like the guy. I'd love to see him get a shot. It'd be a cool story, and it can't be much worse. It can't be much worse.
No, I would agree with that. I mean, he's been a grinder. You know, he came from nothing in regards to baseball life. You know, I mean, he was not a highly touted prospect. He wasn't a highly touted prospect out of high school. And he finds himself in a position where he's done nothing but find ways to literally, and I know it's a little funny, but he's done nothing but get on base and find himself to where you just can't get rid of him in an organization. People might suggest you're trying to get rid of him, but you know what? Can't get rid of him. So I don't know. I mean, I don't mind that at all either, to be honest. So maybe Hurtubise will come up and he'll be like a poor version of TJ Friedl. Or who knows? Maybe we get lucky and he's just as good, if not better. You know? But certainly seems like TJ Friedl is going to be out for another couple weeks at minimum. At minimum. I could be wrong, but my best guess is he'll be back in July.
I mean, Hurtubise is a guy that had a .479 on base percentage last year. between Double A and Triple A. This guy just he gets on base. I'd love to see them give a guy like him a shot. I don't know. I would like to see that. Well, what I will say, 2018 Reds lost 95 games, swept the Dodgers in a 4-game series. Dodgers won 92 games that year. Made absolutely no sense at the time. That's why you play these games. That's why they're you play them every day. We'll see what happens. I don't know. I think it's fun, I guess, for people. There's no way they're going to win that game, and they probably will.
Ned Flanders says, Nick, are we any good?
I think that this is an average team right now that's played a little underperformed by the combination of everything, like I mentioned. I think you have Matt McClain, you have Noelvi Marte. I think you're a slightly above average team. How far are they above average? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. There's too many young guys. You still have guys that you need to figure out. I think we probably went a little overboard on some of these guys and penciling them in as for sure things. But you know what? It's a long season. We might in 2 months be like, I can't believe we doubted that Will Benson was going to figure it out. I can't believe that we doubted, you know, whoever else. Just look at Jamer Candelario. Like, I feel it's completely true about that guy than I did 2 weeks ago. So it'll be interesting to see how we feel about these guys the month after this and the next month and the next month.
All right, let's do a little fun little game here before we end the show. As we go through the diamond, what are guys that you actually think like, hey, you know what? I'll go to war with these guys. Like I feel confident that this guy being on my team, we're gonna get it done at some point. He might not be playing well right now. Doesn't matter. We still believe in him. Or maybe he's playing great, and you think he'll play great the rest of the year. Let's start at catcher, Tyler Stevenson. I'll let you go first, and I'll finish each one.
I think Tyler Stevenson is a starting catcher.
I agree. I don't hate the idea of Tyler Stevenson being the starting catcher.
You could do better, but you could do a lot worse. You could do a lot worse.
I completely agree. Now, this is where it's tough, because who do we actually say is our DH? Now, here's the thing with the DH. It's been bad. So I think that's a pretty fair assessment, yeah?
I think we have about 1.5 to 2 outfield DH types.
In a perfect world, I'll tell you who's the Reds DH. Spencer Steer.
Yeah.
I think you put Spencer Steer in there as a DH, and then from there, you know, maybe it's I know people are going to think I'm crazy for saying this, but if a lefty's hitting, and I'm not saying it's Mike Ford, but it's somebody that's got some pop to them, and they have decent splits against a left-handed pitcher. And, you know, you give Spencer Steer maybe every so often, you want to keep him in the lineup, you can kind of sneak him in into first base every so often. And I know people are going to think I'm crazy for saying that, but that's kind of where I'm at. All right, so let's move into first base, I guess, then. Been bad. Yeah?
Yeah, but I think Jamer Candelario is supposed to be your first baseman. And I think if he's your first baseman, I'd feel okay with that. Because Noelvi Marte is supposed to be your third baseman. The problem is everything had a chain effect. Jonathan India is supposed to be a platoon player. He's supposed to be playing 33% of the time, but he's playing 100% of the time. Jake Fraley and Will Benson are platoon players. One of them have been having to play every single game. Everything has had an impact by McClain and Marte. It's not just that those guys have been out. It's that you've had guys that were supposed to be platoon players have to not be platoon players. We'd probably look at Jonathan India completely different if he was only playing one out of every 3 or 4 games, coming off the bench, being in the role that he was supposed to be in. Remember, this guy was playing the outfield in spring training. This guy was playing first base in spring training. He's been at second base every single day all year. That was never even remotely supposed to be part of the plan. That was plan C or D or whatever it ended up being. That's the problem. I mean, there's only, in my opinion, looking at the roster right now of the guys that are in there, Friedel, Ellie, Steer, Stevenson, Candelario. Those are the only guys that I think are everyday MLB starters or close to it. Everyone else is a piece that fits in a puzzle. It would fit nicely if the whole puzzle was there, but there's so many pieces that are in Arizona or wherever.
California. Suspended. Now, you're right. I mean, that's the sad part of all of this. But I guess we'll go to each position here really quickly as we kind of do this game. And this is why I wanted to do this is because you start to realize the actual issues of this team. So far, we're really disappointed in our DH. So far, we're really disappointed out of the production we've gotten out of first base. Now, guess what? Let's do second base. I'll answer it for you. Trash! You don't have to say it. I'll say it again. I'm speaking for Nick. Nick can correct me if he thinks I'm wrong. Absolute trash. Trash. Bottom of the league.
You have a player that's not a second baseman playing second base.
Thank you. All right, so there we go.
He's a platoon player.
So we got, let's recap again. Let's have some fun here tonight. We got a catcher that we think's okay, serviceable. You know, we're not going to take the risk on it if we're going to have to randomly get an auto generator to select our catcher. We're going to stick with Stevenson. But then when we go to DH, we would 100% take the auto generator. We'd go to first base, we're 100% taking the auto generator. We go to second base, we're 100% taking the auto generator. We go to third base, and now you're going to say, well, what about third baseman? Well, I guess if you're going to convince me that Candelario is your third baseman, then I'd say, okay, maybe I'm sticking with it. But now we have Espinal. It's kind of like we have Espinal there. And I'm going to say it. I'll take the auto generator.
I think I would take the auto generator over Santiago Espinal.
Right. So we finally got into a position now where we all feel good about it. You ready for it? Let's all do a little bit of thank the Lord. Shortstop. We like that. 100%. Nobody's hitting the auto generator on there. And then this is where it gets tricky because now if you go to right field, I would hit the auto generator. I would.
I would too because you don't have platoon partners with them. Now, if I had Jake Fraley and Stuart Fairchild as my right fielder, and I don't have to have those guys go play anywhere else. I know that is a straight platoon. And today it worked to perfection. Stuart Fairchild walked twice. He robbed a hit, played great defense. Fraley came in, got a hit and a walk, I think. Like, that's exactly what you wanted. That was what it was supposed to be, but those guys have had to be in all these different spots. That should have been a straight platoon in right field, but it hasn't been that. Those two guys together would be perfectly fine. I don't know if I would hit the auto generator, but right now it's just Fraley, and he's a one-sided player.
But that's who this team is now. That's my point. I guess the point is more or less like it's not really about right now, but we thought we were going to have, because I think we could have a reasonable discussion about that. You know, people are going to sit here and be like, oh, Nick Kroll or whatever, like this franchise is disgusting. They are frauds. They're not frauds, guys. I'm just saying that at the end of the day, like, this isn't what they thought they were going to have, and you can't predict injuries. Nobody can. So this is what they're left with. But the team that we're talking about right now, we're auto-generating right field. I'm going to do it too. You ready for this one? I'll auto-generate center field because I don't think TJ, and that's not disrespectful to TJ as much as it is like the way that it's gone this year for what we've gotten. We're hitting the auto-generator. It's not been good.
Fred was a four win player last year.
Yeah, but he's not been here.
He's been hurt a lot, and he was hurt a lot in the minor leagues too. But it's also part of the way he plays the game that tends to lead to a lot of this stuff.
And I'm not saying it's TJ's fault.
Completely out of his control. Yeah, I mean, look, I would probably, I don't know with him. I think I probably would roll the dice and keep Friedel.
That's fine. That's fair. I mean, I'm not going to say I would hit the auto generator.
But I don't think what you're saying is crazy, which goes to your point of how many times it's even a question that you.
Well, if Frieda was healthy every single day this year, then I probably wouldn't hit it, right? But my point is it's more or less the fact that I have not gotten any consistency out of that position, and I'll just take my chances on if you're going to give me the 30 other Major League Baseball teams, or I guess it wouldn't be 30, it'd be 29. But my point is you give me 29 other opportunities based off what they've gotten this year, and I'm going to take my chances. And then the last one is left field, and this is where I think that I would stick with it, even though I hate the idea of Spencer Steer being an outfielder. But I love his approach. I think he's a big league hitter. So,
and I think Steer's going to get hot again. I think it's a matter of time before. I think he's proven enough that this is a rough patch for him. I think he's going to get hot. I don't think he's going to be that player that we saw the first 3 weeks of the season again. But I think this is a guy that as much as anyone, I feel like a solid 800 OPS guy. I feel like I shouldn't have to, I don't think I have to worry about that.
And one quick thing. I know that, here's where I think that I should earn some street cred. You know, I'm not asking for a pat on the back, but you know, I am fair. I don't pick players. I don't try to sell players out in regards to like always having an agenda against players. Some people think that I hate Ellie De La Cruz because of the things that I said earlier this year about his defense. Roger in the chat says that Ellie leads the world in errors. That play that he made today was a good play, man. And he needs some help. I'll tell you who he needs help from. He either needs help from the third baseman, who was Espinal at the time. Espinal needs to cut that ball off, man. Like, cut across the field and make a play. And one thing, I guess, when you start playing with Ellie is you start looking around, and I guess you just expect Ellie to make all the plays. I don't know. I mean, why is Will Benson staring at Ellie De La Cruz? I'll never know in a million years. I just don't understand how you could be a player, and it's almost like it reminds me of the kids that when they're young, they know they're not good, and they're looking at the teammates, and they're looking at someone else to do it for them. They're like, well, I don't want to shoot the shot, so you shoot it. I don't understand how Espinal doesn't cut that ball off and make a nice routine play to first. He shifted over to shortstop for a reason. Ellie's up the middle. The ball gets sawed off over the middle. He backhands it. He makes a throw to first. And then, heaven forbid, the first baseman finally dig out a ball. I mean, and I'm not killing Candelario for it. But just like, I'm going to be fair to Ellie and say that it's not, you know, I hate to think that that's Ellie's fault. I really do. So, you know, crush me for saying it, but again, Ellie's a great player, man. He really is. And the one thing that I want to try to make sure that we do, at least on this show, or like you do probably a better job of it than me, but it's just like, we don't have to like always just pat this kid on the tail and act like he's the world's best player, et cetera, et cetera. But I also don't want to like get frustrated because the team's doing things that they're not, you know, they're not playing well. And then it turns into like Ellie's a problem. Like, yes, Ellie swung through a 95 mile an hour fastball that I would have loved for him to get a hit on today. Yes, he went 0-for-5. Yes, he made an error based off the box score. But Ellie's just, again, he's one of the few guys on this team that you can consistently look at and be proud about that he's on your team. And he plays every damn day. He's available. He's there to play. Marte's not there. Matt McClain's not there. TJ Friedel hasn't been there. CES hasn't been there. Tyler Stevenson's been a no-show for large portions of the time. Spencer Steer had a stretch of baseball where he wasn't very good. I mean, so I don't even need to bring up Espinal and Martini and Bubba Thompson and Mike Ford. But Will Benson. Let's keep things in perspective about Ellie De La Cruz, folks. Let's be honest with ourselves a little bit. Ellie's one of, if not the only thing on this team that you should be like very proud about as a Reds fan. Our starting pitching's been pretty good.
Yeah, we had said Ellie's going to come back down to earth. Like, this isn't, you know, Monday morning quarterback like we said like a week ago. Like, he's been great. It's going to be okay when he cools off and he continues to have to make adjustments and figure it out. It's going to be a season of adjustments for Ellie De La Cruz. This is just part of it.
Yeah. This is part of it. And we need some people to step up when we need it the most. And I know India had a pretty decent day at the plate, but you just got to put the ball in play. You got to find a way to put the ball in play when you got a chance to at the end of the game to win a baseball game, Nick. I don't know how else to say it.
All right, well, let's get you caught up on all of the Reds minor league action from Sunday. Start off with AAA, where the Louisville Bats, they won 7-1 over Indianapolis. Bats have now won 6 of 7. They improved to 21-18 on the season. Fantastic start from Carson Spires. Went 6 innings, just gave up 4 hits, no earned runs, only walked 2, and struck out 9. Carson Spires now has a 2.43 ERA and 7 starts the season with Louisville. 42 strikeouts, just 15 walks in 40 2/3 innings. Been a lot of Reds starting pitchers in the minor leagues that have struggled that we were counting on. But Spires has been the exception there. He is off to just an incredible start for the Bats, continuing to provide the Reds some really nice starting pitching depth. Alex Young, another rehab game for him. and another perfect inning. Alex Young has not allowed a run in five games during his rehab assignment. Just one hit allowed over those five and a third innings. Boy, the pitchers at the big league club, they better stay on their game, because the pitchers in the Reds minor leagues down to AAA, there's some really good relievers that could help this team as well. Yasver Zuleta, he also threw an inning, threw a scoreless inning, struck out one and walked one. Blake Dunn was 1-for-5 with a double, did drive in a run. Reese Hines, 1-for-5 with a double. Peyton Burdick, tough day for him, 0-for-3, three strikeouts as he continues to struggle of late after a hot start. Nick Martini did not play for the Bats. All right, down to AA, Chattanooga, they lost 5-4 to Tennessee. Zach Maxwell gave up his first run of the season. He blew a save in the ninth, and then the Lookouts gave up six runs in the 10th inning. They fall to 10-23 on the season. However, Julian Aguiar, really strong outing from him. Went five innings, just gave up one run, no walks, and four strikeouts. Aguiar, after a little bit of a slow start to the season, been very good of late. 2.12 ERA in three starts in May. 12 strikeouts, just two walks in those 17 innings. As mentioned, Zach Maxwell, he struggled in this one. He gave up four base runners, two hits, two walks, did strike out two, but still had a pretty good season. That was the first run he gave up all year. Bubba Thompson was 0-for-4. Poor Bubba, he started 0-for-12 with the Chattanooga Lookouts. Only has two strikeouts, too, so kind of surprising that Bubba Thompson's put that many balls in play to AA infielders and hasn't got a hit to show for it. Tyler Callahan, he walked twice. Callahan, he's got a .442 on base percentage in the month of May, so he is playing pretty well. Austin Hendrick came in late in the game, just got one at bat, 0-for-1 with a strikeout. All right, down to High A, the Dayton Dragons, they won 3-0 over Lake County. Dragons improved to 14-19 on the season. And Jacob Herdebees, as mentioned earlier, he had a home run in this one. He's on technically a rehab assignment with the Dragons. And it was an absolute bomb pool home run to right field. So good to see Jacob Herdebees. Hopefully he can get rolling. I'd love to see him get up to the major league roster, because I really think he could actually help the Reds' big league roster. Sal Stewart, he did walk twice in this one. Cam Collier was 0-for-4, two strikeouts. Collier, after that really hot start, he is struggling of late, hitting just .189, just a .268 on base percentage in 37 at bats in the month of May, and he's not hit a home run since April 28th. Not a whole lot else in this game. Jay Allen 0-for-3, Carlos Jorge 1-for-4 with a triple, Ethan O'Donnell 1-for-4, Victor Acosta 0-for-4, Hector Rodriguez got the afternoon off. All right, and last but not least, down to low A, Daytona Tortugas, they fell 6-4 to Lakeland. Tortugas now 18-15 on the season. But a great day from Alfredo Duno, continues his torrid hitting of late. 3-for-5, drove in two runs. E. Smith Pineda was 1-for-3. Ariel Almonte 0-for-3 with a walk. Dominic Battelli 1-for-4 with a walk. Ricardo Cabrera, he got the afternoon off. All right, well, the Reds, they'll be taking on the Arizona Diamondbacks starting on Monday night. Diamondbacks come in 19-22. Diamondbacks are just 1-5-0 in their last six series. It's only one series win out of the last six series. Of course, that series win was a sweep at Great America Ballpark last week. Diamondbacks, they got a run differential of plus 17, so probably a little bit better than their 19-22 record would indicate. But they are only 9-10 this season at home, and they've actually lost three straight home series. The last home series win actually came all the way back April 12th through 14th against the St. Louis Cardinals. The pitching matchups for this series, Monday night, a 9:40 start. It'll be Graham Ashcraft. He's 3-2, 3.86 ERA, going up against Jordan Montgomery, 2-2, 4.70 ERA. Tuesday, another 9:40 start. Hunter Green, 1-2, 3.38 ERA, going up against Slade Ciccone in a rematch. Ciccone, 1-2, 4.15 ERA. And then Wednesday, the series finale, with a 3:40 start time. Andrew Abbott, 2-4, 3.35 ERA, going up against Brandon Pfaadt. He's 1-3 with a 4.60 ERA. So the Reds will, thankfully, in this series, miss Zach Gallen. This Diamondbacks team, a little bit different than last year. They're just 25th in stolen bases. They only have 18. Last year, they were second in Major League Baseball, 166 stolen bases, right behind the Reds. The Diamondbacks, despite some injuries, they are missing Jordan Lawler, one of their top prospects. They're missing Alec Thomas, Geraldo Perdomo. But they're pretty solid. They are top 10 in average on-base percentage. They're 13th overall in baseball in OPS. All right, obviously the Reds were swept by the Diamondbacks last week at Great America Ballpark. Two of those three losses were only by one run. Reds and Diamondbacks actually 85-85 against each other all time. But here's a really good news. Maybe some positive vibes for the Reds. Reds are actually 44-37 all time against the Diamondbacks in Arizona. That is the Reds' best road record against any active NL franchise. The only other teams that they are even 500 against, the Marlins, they're just two games over 500, 57-55. The Nationals and Expos, Reds are 126-126. So some good vibes. Hopefully the Reds can keep that trend going out in Arizona. All right, a little more on the pitching matchup on Monday night. Of course, Jordan Montgomery for the Diamondbacks last week gave up a lot of base runners. Reds got 7 hits and 2 walks against Montgomery in 7 innings, but they only were able to get 2 earned runs against him. Montgomery has strikeouts very down so far this year, only has 10 strikeouts in 23 innings pitch. This will be Montgomery's just second home start since he signed with the Diamondbacks. The only other start was actually pushed back a day because of that, remember, that B delay. And he actually got hit pretty hard, gave up 6 hits, 6 earned runs, 2 home runs, and 3 innings against the Dodgers. Of course, Montgomery, he didn't sign with the Diamondbacks until March 27th. He's on a 1-year, $25 million deal with a vesting option for next season. He had to start the year at AAA, but since then he's come up and pitched overall okay for the Diamondbacks, that 4.70 ERA, but of course he pitched very well against the Reds last week. Montgomery has a career 3.10 ERA, 5 starts against the Reds. Notable Reds, Candelario, he's just 2-13 with a double. Ellie De La Cruz, 0-6, 4 strikeouts. You have to wonder, maybe this is a game De La Cruz gets the day off. I know we've been saying that a lot this season, but he has played every single game, started every single game. Santiago Espinal, 6-19. Stuart Fairchild, 3-9 with a homer. Jonathan India's 3-11. Sears, 2-10, but he does have a home run. Tyler Stevenson, 4-6. All right, for the Reds, it'll be Graham Ashcraft. Last start was also against the Diamondbacks. He went 5 innings, 6 hits, 3 earned runs, 3 walks, 2 strikeouts. Does have a career 2.55 ERA and 3 starts against the Diamondbacks. Only 1 career start at Chase Field, came last season. Went 6 2/3 innings, just gave up 2 earned runs, 1 walk, and 5 strikeouts. Notable Diamondbacks against Ashcraft. Carroll is 2-5 with a triple. Gurriel Jr., 2-6 with a home run. Marte's 3-8, pair of doubles. Jock Peterson, just 1-11. And then Christian Walker is 1-7. All right. Well, thanks so much for listening, as always, to Chatterbox Reds. Appreciate all of your support. I think there's going to be some good days coming for the Reds. I know it's been a very, very tough stretch, obviously, if you've watched this team. But look, the Reds are just 1-8 in one-run games. They only on the season have a run differential of -5. So look, I think if the Reds, they've got a brutal stretch coming up these next 2 weeks, of course, at the Diamondbacks, then at the Dodgers, they're going to come home and play the Padres and the Dodgers. So a brutal two-week stretch, but I think if they can survive this stretch, I think this team still has a chance to make something of this season. I think that the current vibes don't match overall, I think, maybe where the Reds are at. And obviously, still hoping to get some players back that can really provide some big impact for the Reds this season. All right, well, if you could, make sure you subscribe to Chatterbox Reds wherever you're listening to this podcast. If you could leave us a 5-star review. Most importantly, tell another Reds fan about Chatterbox Reds, how we do these podcasts every single day. And this is the week that I think you want a podcast that has instant reaction every single morning, bright and early, always posted by the time you get up and going, posted in time for your daily commute. Reds will have a lot of night games. They're at 9:40 on Monday and Tuesday. They're at 10 o'clock on Thursday and Friday, 9 o'clock on Saturday. So we'll have podcasts for you every morning, bright and early, recapping each of those games. So be sure to check that out. Of course, also Off the Bench, 10 a.m. to noon, Chatterbox Sports on YouTube. Trace Fowle and the guys will surely be talking about this Red series. Obviously talking Bengals, all things Cincinnati sports and beyond. So Chatterbox Sports, 10 a.m. to noon for Off the Bench. Be sure to check that out. And then, of course, Chatterbox Reds Live. We'll be live in the ninth inning, probably after midnight or so on Monday night. Well, hope that you have a great Monday. Hope your week gets off to a great start. We'll talk again soon. Go Reds.